Hey, what up? It's DK. Thank you so much for listening to the Mixing Music Podcast. I just want to do a quick plug. Did you know that I write kids' books? If you have children, nieces, nephews, I have books that are totally available for free or $10 on Amazon for physical copies. You can go to mixingmusicpodcast.com/kidsbooks to get access and learn more about that. Thank you for all of your support. Now let's get back to the show.
Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.
One, two, three.
Yeah! Hello and welcome back to the Mixing Music Podcast. I'm your host, DK, and with me, as always, the lovely co-host, Lou Jr. Moreno.
I am not a junior. I don't know where this junior came from. My dad's name was Jesus and Dionisio, so...
No junior. That's just the nickname.
Just Jesus
today.
And the God of Wine. Just that's all it is.
Gotcha. God of Wine.
Yeah, Dionisio. Dionisio. You
know? Oh my gosh, Dionysus. All right, what is it? I forgot Dionysus, what it is in English. Dionysus in English.
Either
that's
way,
crazy.
He really likes wine.
Does he really?
Not my dad, but you know.
Oh. I thought you were talking about your dad. All right. Well, welcome to the Mixing Music Podcast. If you couldn't tell, if you're watching on YouTube, we're lounging on chairs. And if you're not watching on YouTube, you could come check us out at youtube.com/DKMixes, DEKEI Mixes, and where we
then
post
you will find us lounging on chairs.
And I also am really, really bad at consistently uploading the episodes on YouTube. So it is our least popular platform, but
you know, I'd argue that a lot of people find us on there too, though.
That's true. That's
I've
true.
Had two potential clients. Call from there. One of them said, hey, I saw the episode talking about acoustic treatment and I wanted to get some advice. And I got another one that was talking about what was it, mix with emotion. You know,
that's a good one.
That is a good episode, actually. I really like that one.
Yeah, because you should mix with emotion. So first off, other than the room being different, because we do have a client in the A room right now,
and this is our B room. Welcome.
Yeah, welcome. This is kind of where I spend my time in. Guess what? We finally did it. Loudon pulled through. We'd like to thank one of our sponsors, Loudon Audio. We have the Loudon LS208s for
Don't they sound amazing?
Oh my gosh. These are condenser microphones, front-facing condenser microphones with huge rejection for podcasts, voiovers, regular vocals. Or
try them on a snare.
Oh, drums and snares. Ooh. I bet it's good.
Oh my God, yeah. And they come with the shock mount. And it's a full metal body shock mount. Mm-hmm. It's so good.
It's not a cheapo shock mount, which is really nice.
Yeah. It's not going to fall apart like the, I'm not even going to say it, but either way, all of you know there are certain shock mounts out there that for some reason the rubber bands just go surprisingly quick.
Yes. Yes. And let's talk about today's episode. So other than Loudon shouting us out, you know, we're shouting them out and talking about the LS208s that you can purchase. You can hit us up.
We can help you out, find the best deal.
Yeah, hit us up on the DMs and Instagram or lou@inthemixstudios.com if you want to hit us up.
L-U, not L-O-U. You might get a bounce back.
lu@inthemixstudios.com. Anyway, today's episode, we want to talk about a requested topic from a fan of ours. The topic is masking frequencies, which is kind of pretty specific. But I think it's interesting to talk about because then we could talk about two things especially, which is what are masking frequencies and how do we kind of like figure out what those are and how do we unmask frequencies?
Okay.
So first question is, Lou, how often are masking frequencies or like a lot of frequencies in a lot of the same frequency in a certain mix, how often do you find that across mixes from different people?
It's actually pretty common, especially when you're doing live instrument recording. Like if you're working with a band, or let's say that you have an R&B group, a soul group, where they incorporated live bass, live drums, maybe some live guitars, along with samples and other things, you tend to have a lot of overlapping frequencies, especially between like 400 hertz and I want to say about 2000 hertz. As, let's be honest, that's actually where the majority of human hearing lies. Now, the biggest issue there is finding clarity in those ranges. Because there's so much going on, it's really hard to get one or the other thing to cut through at a certain point because it's almost the entire body of certain instruments.
Yeah, absolutely. So I find the same sort of thing to be a common problem. What kind of things do you find lead to that problem? Like, for example, I think that one of the things is people aren't referencing. I think sometimes it's monitoring when there's like dead spots in the room or in the listening position where people just don't hear 200 hertz or whatever it is, right? What are some reasons why people are masking frequencies?
So I always like to, and I guess I'm going to come at this with more of a reference behind live recording, because I worked with bands for so much more time than I did with vocalists before I got into the hip-hop R&B scene. And a big thing is walk in the room and listen to the instrument. Because a lot of times, if people don't have a lot of experience with live instruments, they tend to just throw a mic wherever they think is a good spot and then hit record.
Yeah.
They don't actually play around with it. And the funny thing is, miking is a big part of this. If you put a mic on a snare, and me and you have talked about this, you really like the SM-81 trick that you have. I like putting 609s on a chain versus a 57 like many people do. But it's always because it accentuates certain information to get it to sound more real, more like what you hear in the room, what we hear with our human ears.
Or whatever the goal is.
Sometimes exactly. Sometimes you want it to sound like trash. Yeah, like, oh my God, Sylvia Massey. Oh my God.
She's amazing.
I would love to work with her any day. Had I met her in our mutual youths, I would definitely ask her out. Sorry, babe, but you know this. Either way, point is, she's such an amazing engineer and doing so many unique things that you're right. Sometimes that isn't really the goal, but listening and having a goal in mind will help you capture what it is you're looking to capture. But if you're just throwing a mic around, you're going to get a blur of frequencies and you don't really have control over that because you chose to opt out of the control.
Yeah.
Now, that is what I've seen be the number one thing. The second thing is, like you said, monitoring. If you're just going to throw a mic on a guitar cab to add some live guitars to your production, if you throw it at the edge of the cone, you're going to get a lot of low-end pickup. While if you put it dead center, it's going to give you a lot of that like 2, 3K boost, 5K boost. Because you're literally dead center in the cone. That's just how a cone works on a guitar cab. But if you were to pull the microphone back, you'd get a little less low end. If you angle it a little bit, you can actually split the difference between different frequency points that are being accentuated. I think, honestly, if you're not monitoring before you capture, you don't really know what you're going to capture until you hit record.
And at that it's point, hard to do that. At that point, it's hard to do that without an assistant who you can yell at, be like, yo, bring it back a little further, a little bit closer to the turn. Or have you seen those machines that's like remote controlled?
Yeah, that one is crazy. I considered it once, but the hard part about it was this. Though that is very useful, they're very expensive. They're almost $500 for a single stand, which is a little way out of my price budget. A little, even me, I have some nice mics, but that $500 is still
painful. For a stand.
For a stand that I'm not going to use every day, every moment. Now, if you're a professional guitarist who does session gigs from home and everything, and you just don't have time to be going back and forth on your own, it's totally worth it. But unfortunately, my guitar playing is nowhere near as good to be a session guitarist.
And we don't use recorded guitar as much in the studio as as much as we used to. Because I know we both kind of did rock more often.
Yeah, exactly. So because of that, I'd say the classic trick is put on your favorite pair of headphones. Go mic it yourself and move the mic around while you're listening to the record playback and try to find a spot that actually gets it to fit perfectly in the mix. Now, it's always hard. Some people are more used to hearing their speakers than they are in their headphones, but to be honest, that's going to give you a better chance than just throwing the mic and running back and forth blindly.
And the reason why Lou is bringing this up is because I do want to be clear, masking frequencies. So you can have different tones and different spectral frequencies, right? Like a guitar tone will have more 5K. If you get it more towards whatever, right?
Yeah.
This part of the cone, if you get it this far away. And then that's one way. So you can EQ it. You can use miking position.
You're with the mic.
But the point of masking frequency, so what that is that means if you look at the spectral frequency balance of a mix, then there's just a lot of overloading in a specific frequency or area and that's okay sometimes, but what's really causing the masking frequency problem that we're talking about is that things start to get hidden because of it.
Yeah.
Things are kind of overshadowing. For example, oftentimes I hear in a mix that the vocals are definitely loud enough, but there's some frequencies that's playing with the piano, specifically with, you know, the Mellotron or like whatever vintage keyboard that they have is clashing so much with the vocals that even though the vocals are loud enough, the vocals still seem to be buried.
Yeah.
And so that's what we're talking about here. So with Lou's techniques about like miking up a guitar cab, it's all about like intentionally picking which frequencies that you're thinking about, which frequencies you want to cover and which frequencies you want to use. When I'm mixing down a song from scratch, I know a lot of people start with the vocals.
Yeah.
And I'm at a point where I actually do bass and drums first, right? And I do the vocals last, but when I'm mixing the entire beat or the band first, I'm mixing with the vocals in mind. So when I'm carving space for where I know the vocal's going to be. Because I've listened to the demo or whatever, and I kind of just, I don't know. This is one of those gifted things. I don't know how I do it. It's just natural instinct. But I think sometimes I don't always get it right. So I might have to go back and re-EQ some things just to make sure the vocal sits in there properly. But I do see, even without a vocal, just within the instrumental, there's often times that things are clashing. The bottom end of the snare drum and the acoustic guitar.
Yeah.
You know, just things are kind of getting in the way, so you can't tell which instrument is what. And a lot of it is, like you said, if you're recording or producing, is mic choice, mic selection. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's all part of the frequency manipulation, right? Yep. So it's like choosing a mic and figuring out where to place it is a smoother, easier way, but the same idea as an EQ.
Yep.
You're like manipulating the frequencies.
Yep.
But with an EQ, you're actually like technically distorting the signal. You're manipulating the signal, where as far as like, if you move it around, that's better.
Which, to be clear, people, I know distorting, we usually associate that to like distortion, but distorting by definition just means altering anything from its original form.
Yeah.
So realistically, what I really like that you mentioned is like, sometimes we choose our tools to get a certain goal out of it, right? Like, we'll mix sometimes drum and bass first. I know definitely I'll do like synths and pads, and I'll try to carve space for the vocals because I'll listen to the vocal first.
Those always get in the way. Like anything low mids.
Exactly. Like that, and because of that, I'm always trying to listen in and say, okay, great, this is what I'm hearing being the issue. But I tend to mute the vocals so I can hear in detail exactly what I'm moving out of the way, because I now know where I need it to sit. But just like you, I try to be coming from a band, being a guitarist myself, I tend to be music first anyways. But my goal, just like you, as always, is getting the vocal to be crystal clear. But because of that, I just want to make sure that whatever I'm capturing is the right thing.
Absolutely. So I think one of the ways that you can figure this out is a technique that you can use to help you uncover masking frequencies is, and I want to preface this with this thought, really, mixing for mono compatibility is kind of like a dead thing. There's really no purpose for it. People can debate clubs, and people can debate AM radio, or even phones are now stereo. So I would say, this advice is not for that. But I would say, if you mix in mono, the reason why it's good is actually because when nothing is panned and everything is centered, because you can hide masking frequencies by panning one way and the other way, and you can't tell. But if you make a mono, then all of a sudden you can't hide masking frequencies with panning.
Oh yeah.
So and then it'll sound and even more too clear. Yeah. Exactly, in phase. So it's like, so I do think that if you think you're having trouble with a bunch of masking frequencies, you're not trying to, you can't quite figure it out yet, try to mix in mono. I think that's why I have the mix cube as well, to figure out what's kind of masking each other. Mm-hmm. Shout out, there is a podcast listener, I believe out in Europe.
I saw that.
Yeah, that bought the mix cube. Thank you for listening to the show.
A mono cube too.
Yeah, and all of this, some of the equipment that we've been talking about is on the website, mixingmusicpodcast.com, mm-hmm. under the sponsors list and the equipment recommendation. But that's one of the ways to do it.
Mm-hmm.
What are some ways that you either find or fix masking frequencies?
So, 'cause masking can also come down to phase too, but that's a whole other topic.
That's a phase. Phasing is a whole nother episode.
Yeah, exactly. But mono is definitely a big one. I don't know if you noticed, but sometimes when I'm doing my mastering, I'll master in mono because I want to know where the issues kind of land naturally, because not every time is the mixer actually checking their mix in mono, which is fine. It is what it is. And like you said, not everything is in mono anymore. And usually when I find something that is in mono, I'm kind of surprised. I'm like, oh, look at that. I wonder how it sounds. You know, but a lot of times, especially in mastering, you can actually pinpoint where there's issues in the mix, and that way I can send back notes like, hey, could you correct this in the pad? It seems like it's really consuming a lot of the frequency range where the vocal is. But when I'm mixing, what I like to do is I think it's what is it called? Adapters metric AB.
Oh, for
yeah, where you can actually see frequency content, but they actually have a spectral map on it too. So let's say that you're actually trying to figure out what's fighting with it, and if it's more like something that's dead centered, or if it's off to the sides, or where it's at. If you start playing certain instruments together, you'll start noticing where like certain information is being lost. Then add the vocals to it, right? But as you pan them, this is once again one of those phasing things. Like, you notice that it sounds a little bit fatter if an instrument is pulled to the left.
Yeah.
You know, the funny thing is, if you just were to use that oscilloscope or whatever it is to pull it to the side and everything while you're actually checking it, you'll notice that there's some kind of separation of that frequency too, because it's no longer trying to match it in the middle with the vocal. So I know some people say always hard pan. Some people say always do variable pan. I'm more of a hard pan kind of guy because of this. But once you start playing with where it is in the mix, you'll notice that some of those clashing frequencies get pulled away from it. Yeah. You can actually just separate those frequencies from where they're clashing just by creating space. And mid-side mixing is a big thing for that for me. Because
well,
half
hence
the time,
mid-side sound.
Exactly. That's actually the big part of my company name.
Yeah.
But mid-side mixing, like using like the BX Digital, it'll actually allow you to listen in to the frequency as you're sweeping around. If you put auto listen on, you can do that for the bandwidth as well. You can listen to how much of the band is actually capturing or negating. And then they actually have a dynamic EQ single band kind of thing built in as well. So if you need something to actually kick out of the way for the vocal, doing a lot of like mid-side side chaining is actually really useful. And you can do that in Pro Q3 as well.
Yeah, that's what I do. Is like you can split the mid and the side and the EQ
exactly.
And just EQ out the side. Sometimes,
and then
it's not always.
Apply the side chain to that.
Yeah, it's not always, but there's like always tricks that you can use, like EQing out the side or clear it out, whatever it is, right?
But mid-side is so useful for that. So I'd say if
you're
trying to
always. I don't think it's like you have to use mid-side, but I think that there's going to be
useful.
Very intentional times where that's definitely going to be the better answer.
Let's say you have like a Rhodes that you don't necessarily want hard panned. And because there's a lot of that like low mid, but mm-hmm. also upper mid, but there's not like that center mid going on necessarily. There's no like heavy 900 in it.
You can just
you know
EQ
I mean?
The mid channel.
Exactly. You can EQ the mid channel out a little bit, but let's say it starts getting a little too thin. And they're like, you know what? I still need it to be out of the way of the vocal a little more. You can use the sidechain dynamic frequency, whatever it's said, dynamic EQ, but on the mid only. Don't do it to the sides. That way, on the sides, it still sounds like the Rhodes is still there in place. But when the vocal comes in, it takes over that mid frequency. But it's there's always a way. But I really like using the BX Digital 3. and Pro-Q3 for those kind of like checking where it is. Actually, Pro-Q3's analyzer is a really good tool for that.
Yeah, so I was going to talk about that. So FabFilter Pro-Q3 has an analyzer, and I think a few other plugin companies do this as well. Actually, Neutron does something really cool. I don't know if you've ever seen this. So FabFilter, if you pull up, if you have two instances, let's say one on the instrumental across the entire instrumental bus, right? Mm-hmm. And then if you decide to mix that way, and you have one on the all vocals bus, you can actually see, it'll show you on the frequency spectrum, like red bars up and down the frequency spectrum where it shows that there's the most clashing. So you can actually like dip that area and whatever and boost it in the other or whatever. Neutron, first off, thank you for sponsoring the show. We do want a quick shout out for our sponsor Isotope right now.
Oh yeah.
Isotope is amazing, has a wide variety of plugins, and I'm about to talk about one right now. But if you would like 10% off discount for Isotope products, you can visit isotope.com/mmpodcast and use the code MMPOD10 for 10% off your next order, not including Spire or monthly subscription bundles. But yeah, that's isotope.com/mmpodcast. But anyway, thank you so much for sponsoring Isotope. But Isotope has Neutron, which is part of one of the plugins that you can buy. And in Neutron, they actually have a frequency analyzer like that if you have multiple instances, just like the FabFilter. But the one thing that's different is that you can link it. So if you link two, like let's say if I link the beat bus and the vocal bus, and I see however they indicate the masking frequencies, I can dip the frequency in Neutron and it'll automatically boost in that same frequency.
Really?
Yeah, so it'll like link it, so it'll like invert the signal. So it won't just, you won't just see the masking frequencies, but you can actually like do the opposite. Cut in the vocal, boost in the beat, cut in the beat, boost in the vocal. And so it like automatically, and it doesn't take a lot. Like it takes like 1 to 2 dBs to like unmask it because you're doing twice as much.
Yeah.
It's wild. It's actually really nice.
I gotta check this out. I really do.
Yeah, and yeah, so I've used that every once in a while. It's really clever. It's really cool. And one of the good reasons to get Neutron. I don't know if FabFilter does that. I don't think it does.
No, it does not.
And
at least to the best of my knowledge, it doesn't.
Yeah, and I may be wrong, but Neutron does a really good job with that, and it sounds really great. And I used to, and I still use that sometimes as a trick, but I used to use that a lot. And I do highly recommend it. If you're having a hard time hearing masking frequencies and uncovering, using the Neutron tool, linking the two channels or how many ever channels, and kind of doing the opposite sweeps together, you'll find that it will carve a lot of space between the two elements that you're mixing with against. So other than that, I think we're wrapping it up the show.
Yep.
Wrapping up the episode, I think we covered a lot of everything. We talked about mixing in mono, frequency analyzers, using reference tracks. We talked about
monitoring before you actually commit.
Yeah, there you go. Using non-distortion techniques to manipulate frequencies. That I think we talked a little bit about how masking is inevitable to a certain degree. Like you can't just high pass, low pass everything.
If you got three guitars in the same track, I mean, come on.
Yeah, but I think that there's still ways that you can make each one poke out, but they don't have to be like perfectly huge. So no, I would just say just like, and I do think at the end of the day, sometimes panning does help. And I think
it definitely does.
I don't think it's a good way to like rely on it, but I think it does help. But yeah, we talked a lot about a lot of things today. So thank you for listening. If you're interested in more content, hit the subscribe button. If you're on YouTube,
hit the
like button. Commenting helps a lot with the algorithm. So if you'd like to support our channel, comment and subscribe, like the video. That really does help a lot. If you're listening on podcasts, rate 5 stars. Put us on the playlist.
Tidal just added podcasts now too.
There you go. We're on Tidal. You can listen to our voices in HD, even though I upload them as MP3s.
Yay! High quality MP3s.
I'm teasing. But yeah. On that note, happy mixing, my friends, and stay saucy.
1, 2, 3.
If you'd you'd like to take advantage of my free guides and online videos, please check out links.dkmixes.com. That's links.dekeimixes.com. The Mixing Music Podcast is proud to say that we have a lot of free resources outside of the actual podcast. Visit mixingmusicpodcast.com/links to find access to our free PDFs and free resources.
Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a Swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.